love, kindness, human connection. These are some of the things we talk about on the Danny Painter Show. It's a thing. This show is intended for a more mature audience. We might sometimes say bad words.
Hello!
Hello! Happy Thursday!
You too! Yo! How are you?
I'm good! I am fucking stoked to speak to you, dude!
Me too!
Yo. Look at your fancy ass studio, bro! Like, living the dream, hey? Wow!
Yo, now I'm busy. Let me start this interview with a vomit.
Let's do that. I mean, it wouldn't surprise anyone, I don't think. I've googled you a little bit and people have this like very strange idea of you, which I'm excited to unpack.
Wait, you're saying what? People have a
very strange idea of you.
What's that idea?
That you are like weird and out there and like...
Am I not?
I don't know.
I love that.
I'm back at who fucking knows at this point.
Yeah, sorry. No, I was secretly filming that for my own archives. Now I'm here. I'm waiting.
You could have at least fucking told me, Peach. I would have put lip gloss on, dick.
Don't worry. I'll throw a filter on. I'll put the little... No, it's okay. Cool.
The only prerequisite I ever have is please make me look thin and rich. That's all that I want.
Well, you look both of those things already, so...
You're so fucking nice. Shame. Ready to go?
Hang on. I'm waiting for a coffee, but I will be in 2 seconds.
You have people to bring you caffeine.
Well, priorities, am I right?
Must be nice living in Peachland.
Okay. I am ready to go.
No, we'll wait for your coffee. It's fine. I don't want to drag you on a podcast when your coffee arrives. I mean, I want to, but I won't.
Yeah. No, I'm, yeah. Okay. Hang on. Give me a sec.
Do you?
Okay. I'm just telling people to leave me alone. For a moment. Okay.
are you finally ready?
I'm focused. Okay.
Are you sure? You don't need like another 5 minutes, Mariah.
To Mariah. I totally knew when I was like replying to that message now that I'm coming across a bit Mariah.
It's okay.
I'm really not. Yeah.
Not at all. Not even a little.
Only when I choose to.
So, welcome to my house in Brakpan. Thank you for coming to my Zoom.
Thank you for inviting me. Really, I'm looking, you know, very much forward to speaking with you.
Were you nervous?
Not at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cause we go back and I know some things that I could like, we could talk about.
I wouldn't have said yes if I like the fear. I like getting out of comfort zones.
Oh, wow. Yeah. This is a new kink for me. This is going to be exciting to unpack. Fear.
Yeah, go for it. I'm more than ready, and there should be coffee coming through that door any second. And then, here we go.
Wow.
Thank you so much. Hello.
Hi.
Say hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, and you?
Good, thank you. Can I also get one?
Am I?
Okay.
Through the screen.
Coming.
thank you.
Okay, so Peach from Pletson gets coffee delivered. I bring my own water to my shoots. But I mean, hey, it's levels.
I bring
levels,
my own
levels.
Water and I pay for the coffee and the service. It's purely when we're busy in the studio and in the zone, or if there's clients here, especially in the sort of corporate vibe, then, you know, coffee being delivered is the absolute first priority.
Okay. Okay.
I believe.
I mean, enjoy your coffee. Let me judge you on what coffee you're drinking. What is it?
Well, usually I drink black coffee, but now I've mixed it up with a bit of, wait.
Fancy. Okay.
She's fancy. I just fancy. Drink it. Yeah.
Right. So, Peach from Pletson. I'm going to do a little bit of a throwback. We were in high school together, and we haven't actually spoken properly since I dropped out.
You never dropped out.
I did. I left. I wrote my Afrikaans prelim and I left. I was out of there. Gone.
So didn't you finish matric?
I don't know.
Are you the ones asking the questions here?
No, you can ask the questions. I don't have the fancy piece of paper that makes me...
But I swear it felt like you were there till very late in matric.
No, I wrote my Afrikaans prelim and that was it.
You decided.
Yeah, it was. You know what the problem was? I was busy shooting at that stage, and my mom was having to drive from Brakpan to Pretoria to Joburg, Pretoria, Brakpan, to like pick up and drop off and like all of that. And then we had a conversation with the principal at that stage, who I will not name, and he he said he thought it would be a better idea if I left quietly as opposed to being asked to leave because
I was upset. Anything happened? Because I didn't know about this. And by the way, most interesting people don't have matric, in my opinion. So,
you're very kind to me. Like, I don't know what I'm deserving for this, but thank you.
No, I mean it.
I mean, the piece of paper has its benefits, though. Like, I would have loved to study, and I can't. But I suppose I could always get the paper. Although now I'm too old and my brain doesn't work anymore.
You get it. It's not like you go into school. You just write the final exam.
Sonia said the same fucking thing to me, but I don't trust either of you at all.
It's true. You just write the exam.
How do you know?
I know people who's also done it like, you know, 10 years or something after the fact when they wanted to study. Yeah.
Okay. I'll consider it.
I used mine to go study, but then I dropped out of that, so.
What did you study?
Music, jazz.
That makes sense. I have this vivid memory of being in school with you and just being constantly irritated by you. Like, you were that person. I think I failed history or something because of you, because you wouldn't stop drumming on the table or on like someone's head. Look,
allow me this opportunity, I don't know, more than a decade later, to apologize. I was I had a lot of clown energy back then.
Yeah.
And I was very sort of hyperactive. And since then, I've actually zened out quite a bit. Yeah, I can still tap into it, but I've learned to master the, or not master, but to... Yeah, better sort of, yeah, master that part of myself, I guess.
Listen, I use the word irritating very loosely because you were also very funny and incredibly cool.
Somewhere in between irritating and entertaining.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's my whole brand, isn't it?
Definitely. So, like, talk to me a little bit about, for someone who doesn't know you, because I did a deep dive in your internet online presence, and people like don't know much about you behind the name of Peach. I mean, people are still Googling like, what is your real name? So talk to me a little bit about where you come from and what made you the person that I met at Pro Art Elfin Park.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in the Moot. I went to a small-ish Afrikaans high school, primary school called Tuisjesdal. And going from Tuisjesdal to Praate kind of felt like moving to Los Angeles from Bloemfontein. It was a big leap. It was a big jump. And suddenly I went from the sort of more not conservative, but more like, traditional Afrikaans primary school to Praate, and people were smoking weed and, you know, being openly gay since, you know, nothing was really taboo in Praate. People had long hair and, you know, some people were asexual. I was just learning most of these terms, you know, and people thought I was gay for a long time. Also, because my matric told me to dress up in bell bottoms and have my shirt like this and bells on my shoes.
So sexy.
I agree. I totally agree. And, you know, people were doing poetry and ballet and, yeah, a whole world opened up for me. And I am actually very grateful for that. And I think I've learned a lot there, and it's laid a lot of the foundations for what I do today. And I gotta give them those sort of flowers, even though it had its challenges as well. I think a lot of good happened there. And yeah, so the person that arrived there was certainly not the person that left, and it's certainly not the person that's speaking with you now. But I think that's the whole, you know, thing. We are constantly sort of becoming ourselves, even though that's not ever any one thing.
Yeah.
So, that's that person.
You also come from a very well-known family. What kind of bearing does that have on you? Because I, like, just from personal experience, trying to get into your, like, head a little bit for this interview, thinking around, like, my dad and what that meant for me growing up, and definitely never wanting to go into the music industry because of it. Your parents and your sister are both incredibly well known, as are you now. But growing up, was that something that you struggled with, to like fit into his shoes or your mom's shoes?
No, I wouldn't say I struggled with it. Ironically, because as long as I can remember, my parents were both on stages doing, you know, everything from comedy to farces to musicals, and they were on TV a lot. And I honestly believed that grown-ups go into the TV, like that's what you do. Like, I thought that everyone's parents, like, you know, were just on TV, and that's the job you do or the thing you do when you grow up in the world. I don't know whether I decided to go and do drama at Praate because there's this love for it, or because it's in my genes and in my blood. There was never any pressure from them to go and follow. In fact, they were like, no, don't do
it. Get a real job, real job.
Get in, do something different. But the thing is, I always loved films and acting and television and theater. And I went to Praate with the idea to develop that and then to go and study it. But somewhere along the line, that dream almost got hijacked by a new dream that was waiting in the wings, so to speak. And that was music. You know, I guess when I joined my first band, Shu, that derailed the whole plan. And I kind of feel like I did satisfy that desire in the process of being in Praate, and then I wanted to, you know, follow music more, and that's sort of where my path started separating from the rest of my family. Even though we're all in entertainment, I never went the acting route, even though I do act in music videos and stuff. So I feel like I get to satisfy both in this space.
Speaking of Shu, I think I confessed this to Wagner. I don't think I've ever told you this, but so Shu was big back when we were in Praate, and I remember going to Thrasher's gigs and stuff. But one day, you had one of those blue school bags that was always fucking open, always everywhere. And in the school bag, you had, I think it was your Shu demo, and you'd still written on it, Shu. It was a white CD. I stole it out of your bag, and I still have it.
What?
I still have it. I will find it.
That is such a cool story. Please send me a picture of that. Shu was S-H-U.
S-H-U. Yep.
So just for the people that don't know, which I'm sure is everyone, it wasn't Shu like a size 9, you know, sneaker. It's just, yeah, I used to make these demos and write on them. And, I remember the first time I ever submitted like music for radio was at Radio Tux, and I took them this fraught, ugly PBR with me with the tracks on it, and like I made my own art for it, and they were kind of like, okay, I guess we could have a listen to this, see if there's anything there.
Did they playlist it?
They did eventually, yeah. Like, I don't know if they playlisted that first one I ever dropped off there, but they still have it. And when I went there like 12 or 13 years later for an interview, they went into their archives and they showed me this relic, and I was like, oh, wow. And it was actually really cool to have that visual reminder of where you come from, because that day was the biggest like achievement and goal, and like, this is all I wanted, was to go to the station, give them our music, which was our whole world, and have them play it.
Yeah.
And I believe that if I can get that, then, you know, success.
Made it. Gold reach
life. And then it was just funny to, so many years later, see this thing and look at it as like a CDR. It just looks ridiculous, you know.
But to also
acknowledge it as a dream, and that it is cool, and that it is this thing, and it shows you how our idea of what we want, or our goals, or what we need, never really ever ends. They keep shifting.
Yeah.
So it truly is only worth the joy that you can feel and gain or get from it in that moment. It's funny because once you get what you want, it sort of collapses the whole game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, once you've achieved all of the things and you've leveled up, you die. So I feel that shifting that as much as you can and as many times as you can is probably healthier.
Exactly. Definitely.
So, okay. So just to go back to Pra'ate and Shu and all of that, you looking back when I was thinking about this, and even now, you haven't changed a lot. You still seem to be authentically you, which is what you were even in high school, when the rest of us were struggling with our identities and all of the shit that comes with a high school, in a high school like that, especially. You were very authentically you. And I felt like going back a little bit on the internet and reading and consuming some of the stuff that you've created, you've always been that. How have you not allowed this industry to change you? Because surely at some points there must have been people going, you're a bit extra, reel it in, be more like this.
No, definitely. I think, look, I do, it's a very interesting question, and I'm going through like several answers in my head.
All of them, this is your space. All of them, do all of
them.
Yeah,
I've always had sort of, I wouldn't say I've never struggled with a sense of identity. I definitely have, but I have also always had a sort of strong sense of self. I think I realized earlier on that the lie is that your sense of identity lies in what you do or what you achieve. So I've let go of, I know my identity isn't hinged on my achievements or my accolades or what I do. It's not the guy on stage, because if you lose all that, and I think the pandemic has showed that to a lot of people, who are you then? You can't hinge your identity on your house or the car you drive or the clothes you wear or the amount of views you get online, because none of that is you. And I think I learned that quite earlier on, and then it was reconfirmed again by the pandemic, because I was like, I don't even feel like I am a musician most of the time. Sometimes you wear a talk show host hat for a bit, but that's also not you. It's just like, it's like clothes.
Yeah.
You wear this thing and you live this little chapter, mini chapter of a part of you. I think in many ways we have a symphony of selves. And it isn't this one thing. You have many selves. Like if you misplace your keys, you didn't misplace them. You literally placed them. It's just that you've moved beyond the self that placed those keys, and now you have a different set of desires and goals. And once you get back to that person who walked through the door, you instantly remember where you actually placed them.
Yeah.
You can't misplace keys. You can lose them, but you can't misplace them. So you have the symphony of selves, but in the other end of that, I also believe that you don't have like a self at all. Like the whole idea of your self is just it's this construct that no one else will share with you.
Yeah.
It's just this selection of thoughts that you have picked about yourself and decided like, that's me. But you have to also be open to the fact that that isn't you, and you are all of that and none of it. And that's the cool thing about being alive, is I think being alive means you're constantly growing and changing. And change and growth, even when it's for the better, is always a difficult and painful process. But it's so necessary, because that is what means you're alive. Being alive means growing and changing, and trying to have an identity that's hinged on something that doesn't allow you to do that. Just what? Like, yeah, I'm a big successful lawyer. And what happens if everything changes and you're a guy under a bridge standing with your hands, you know, on a drum fire? Who's that? Because that's been you all along.
Still you. Same you.
Yeah.
I read something, what you've just said has really resonated with me. I read something not so long ago. It might have been in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not sure. But it was about that, the thoughts and the sense of self that we all have, and that we hold on to it so much. But you cannot be those thoughts. You are the observer of the thoughts. The thing that's seeing the thoughts, that's who you are. That isn't thinking. That's just observing. That's who you are. And that's, I think, who you need to tap into.
Exactly. And that's actually the sort of fundamental principle behind the practice of meditation, is knowing that you're not your thoughts or your emotions, because all the joy and anger and pain and pleasure you've ever felt, where is all of that now?
Yeah.
So it has no choice but to sort of like dissolve. It's there and then it's gone. It's like if there's this massive river, and then sometimes there's a log floating down, sometimes there's a guy on a canoe, other times it's kind of dry, and then, but it still stays the river. And I think you are the river and not the things that appear in it. But a lot of times we do convince ourselves that we are what we feel and think right now.
All the time, but it's human nature to do that, because we want to feel, and also it's easy to feel sad, and it's easy to feel like everything is against you, because it's almost comforting, right? When we are sad and we're feeling like the world is against us, because that means we are not at fault. It's not our fault then. Yeah. It's everyone else's fault. But as soon as you own that, the most incredible things happen, and the most beautiful coincidences. The universe always wants to work with you, or God, or whomever you believe in. You just have to make that first step. But on this very stoner esoteric shit that my friends will drag me for, do you meditate? How do you find balance? Because you're doing fucking 9 million things. What do you do for balance?
I'm a big believer in balance in all forms. One thing I feel like I kind of understand is that there's duality in everything, that nothing is ever just good or bad. I do meditate. I think there's two main tools for finding balance. If you take conventional, like therapy or psychology approach, it's going into emotions and what you feel. That's sort of like, let's call it the cardio approach. You're on the treadmill, you're going through it, you're sweating, it's coming out of your body, it's like, and then afterwards you feel some sort of release or relief. Meditation is more like, let's say, a stretch stretching the muscles, or yoga, a much slower approach where you're less in it and more acknowledging it from a distance, like you are beyond just the thing, you know, experiencing these emotions. And I think balance is just, yeah, not finding attachment or identity in what you do is a big one, because put it this way, we had this massive dream of like doing this international tour in Europe, and it was all booked, and we worked for like 6-7 months, and then suddenly pandemic came and we put it out for 3 months, and then with another, and now it's going to happen 1st of December, it starts almost 2 years later.
Yeah.
But you can, when that sort of thing crumbles, allow it to crumble you as well. But if you don't invest your sense of self into that, then it's just like a thing that doesn't happen. I think balance is in sort of relinquishing the desire for control. Mm. It's a weird thing, but I think we want to have control.
Yeah,
but I don't think we really do. I don't think we... And I think it's, yeah, this is a complicated, I'm trying not to go too esoteric and philosophical.
No, do it.
But it's just that I think I lead a very sort of an examined life. And that's sometimes not always like easy, but it's also like one of the best things I think you can do, because everything's out in the open to yourself. And when it isn't, you go in and you go and drag it out into the light. So you have to accept whatever you find. You choose not to live in like denial. So you have to be open with what you find about yourself, the good, the bad, the hideous, you know, wow. And just try and accept it without judgment.
Without judgment.
Yeah. And I think it brings you closer to who you really are, because it's a very difficult process trying to get to know yourself.
What was the thing, the catalyst for this? Because I have found over the years of interviews that people only find and seek out balance and healing when they have pretty well fucked up in the past, like lost all sense of balance, found drugs, alcohol, gambling, whatever. You only look for balance because you know you need it within yourself. What was that thing for you?
You're right. Look, I think...
He's not going to answer this question.
No, I'm not. But the thing is, no, I am, but in a vague way. Look, I think anything that causes some kind of... So I always thought, you know, like the sort of core philosophy of Buddhism is life is suffering. And that has always sounded so grim to me, like life is suffering. But I think I started to understand that suffering is life. Suffering creates the foundation and the soil for life to happen in. And that growth and all of that is a process, and it's a uncomfortable and painful process. And yes, I think often there needs to be a catalyst that jolts you out of, you know, just the sort of bubble or the comfort zone you've been existing in. It needs to really humble you and peel back everything. That can be achieved with mushrooms, by the way, if you do a very high dose.
What is with everyone that went to Bratz Alvin Park trying to fucking get me to do psychedelics? I don't understand. Like, I get it, but I don't get it.
No, look, I will never tell someone to do it, but I believe it will find you if when you're ready to receive it. I can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth, but it is very true. I think, that is one way of sort of being able to do that in a terrifying but safe way, I guess, if you want to look at it that way.
Sounds great.
But yeah, I think for me, it's important to not put focus or emphasis on whatever that catalyst might be, because it isn't actually important. It's just the process is important, and it's an ongoing thing. It's something that it's like music, you know. It doesn't end. It's not like, oh, I know music, I understand music. It's like, it's this big endless thing, and you just take part in it on some minuscule scale and contribute to it, and then you die. And I think examining yourself on this planet is the same sort of thing. I think you just get a little bit closer to who you are, because it's not a constant thing.
Yeah.
It's something that's always becoming and changing. And you owe it to yourself to witness that, because there's nothing better than that you can do. You can't do, yeah. Am I speaking English?
Yeah, no, you were right.
Sometimes speak English, but I think in Afrikaans, and this is how Mengels has started to gebeur also, by the way.
Oh, yeah, no, we're going to talk about that, because Rian hates Mengels. But just quickly on the mushroom thing. I've researched DMT and ayahuasca. My brother's done it all, and I have friends that have like all gone and done it and taken mushrooms and stuff. And they talk about ego death. Would you consider it, like, in layman's terms? Obviously, I've never experimented with drugs. I've smoked a bit of weed, but that's it. Would you consider a massive life shock catalyst event to be a form of an ego death, because it does push you towards better?
Yeah, I think it's how you deal with something like that. It could be it is a sense of ego death, because that part of yourself and who you've been up until that point or dies, and you have to work through that and unpack that, and it takes time, and it takes both ways of doing it, by going into it and by observing it from a non-emotional place, so that you can understand it from within and without. It is a form of ego death. It's a form. I think there's good and bad ways of dealing with something like that. There's the way of sort of avoiding it, ignoring it, or building a false narrative for oneself. And none of that is going to help in the long run. I think the truth is the only way, even if it is uncomfortable. Always rather pick an uncomfortable truth over a comfortable lie, because just like gravity is this invisible physical law, but it's invisible, there's, I believe, tons of call them, you know, spiritual laws, and truth and lie, it's one of them. I believe you can never, ever, ever get away with a lie. I think it's impossible to. It's the vain and naive attempt to twist the fabric of reality. And it always twists itself back.
Yeah.
Not quite like gravity, but whether it's 3 months or 3 years or 30 years or after your death.
Yeah.
The truth always comes back.
The truth
always. Yeah. Either to yourself or to others, but so I think being honest with oneself and with the people around you, like saying what you mean, meaning what you say, is absolutely essential for also getting to know who you are. Because if you know you're a liar, then how can you believe your own ideas and thoughts about yourself? Because you're the thing that knows you lie. So,
wow.
You're fucked.
Fuck, this is like way not what I thought this conversation was going to be. You are like so much deeper than But you see, that's the thing, right? The image that we see or that you portray or that you allow us in on social media and in the things that you create, it's one piece of you, but it's not all of you. And I think so many people forget that you, even you and me and whomever, is a whole human being with many different facets and things.
There's a galaxy going on in here, and to try and reduce that, for anyone to reduce themselves down to this one thing, what they do or what they've achieved or their income or whatever, is actually such a disservice to oneself, because that, you know, you've reduced yourself to that. And there's so much to people. And I think if you're open to yourself and to your own vulnerabilities, it enables you to see that much easier in others. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't become this weird, scary thing. It just becomes more normal than talking about. I get extremely bored when people talk about what they do or what they're busy with.
Yeah.
Not because, you know, I don't care, but I'm more like, you know, how do you feel?
Like, who are you? Who are you when no one is around?
You know, really?
What are you reading?
It's I think it's that symphony of selves thing. I think I just decided that social media as a platform isn't the place for necessarily the place for like those sort of discussions or politics or this, because it just polarizes at the end of the day. So I saw it more as an escape from that. And I realized like, oh, I have a large part of myself that can tap into that and enjoy and experiment with that, and rather have that part flourish on social media. And every once in a while, some philosophy and vulnerability will creep in. But for the most part, it's, you know, it's a lighthearted escape. But then different platforms allow for these sort of conversations, I guess.
Yeah, and you have one as well. But before we talk about that, going back to what you said about you are not your job, you are not the money, you are not the career. What then drives you to tour, to create, to do all the things? Because obviously money and fame and notoriety comes with that. So you've got to separate that. But then what is the driving thing?
No, look, first of all, when it comes to money and fame, money is never the object. For me, it's only the means. Like, if I get money, I like spending it on more creative stuff.
Okay.
Fame, I know, is this temporary, fleeting thing. So trying to hinge on that, you're setting yourself up for like massive future disappointment, because it has no choice but to fade, or you have to be famous and just be old, you know? So it's like, I think for me, what drives me is creating and sharing that and seeing how it impacts people and getting that sort of reaction and chemistry back. Whether it's in terms of a live show and an audience sort of scenario, or making content and reading people's responses. I think when you create anything, you are changing the world and yourself and others. You are literally in some minuscule way taking part in the act of like, in, you're taking part in creation. And that is like quite wild. There's nothing, and then you create something, and you don't even know most of the time what that thing is going to be.
Yeah.
I think trying to know what it is before it is the, is kind of like, pointless. So I often would start a song and not even know what I want to write about or need to write about, and just like press a chord and then hear a line, and then you're like, oh, this is therapy. I'm tapping into another deeper layer of your, you know, self, where you don't know what's going to come out. And for years, I used to like make very sort of more dark heavy, sort of more depressing music. And then with Van Pletsen, it went to the opposite side of that, and it was really nice to start exploring that as well. You know, not
but
just
both you.
It's both me, and that's the funny thing. If you lose that sense of identity of like, oh, I have to sound like this, or oh, I need to be this guy, or I see myself as that guy, or I need to be this genre, then you stop limiting yourself, and then you can actually make things that you can't imagine or fathom yourself, you know.
I've always said, you guys in the music industry in particular, anyone who writes and creates with words, you guys have been set up from the beginning to deal with your shit so much better than the rest of us. Because I think in lockdown, we all went out and bought fucking journals and opened the first page and we were like, well, what do I write? It seems so self-serving. But you guys have been doing this, and I think, like you said, it's a form of therapy. And I'm glad that you said that, because it's going to, I think, push the rest of us to try harder. Because we talk about journaling a lot, and none of us ever fucking do it. But I wanted to quickly touch on your circles that you move in, because it sounds like you've curated your life. And you, like you said, you examine it, you manage it. It's very curated in order to keep you good and healthy and happy. How have you done that with your friendship circles and the people that move in spaces around you?
Yeah, I think friendships are extremely important, and I'm very grateful for all my friends. And I think the main there's this beautiful quote or poem by David White where he said the ultimate touchstone of friendship is not self-improvement or improvement of the other, but to witness. It's about the gift of witnessing someone else's life, and about someone else witnessing yours, regardless of what that is and what happens. That's all it really should be. And I think what I like about the friendships I have is we can talk about deep sort of things and vulnerabilities and real things, and then also about, you know, the most random, ridiculous, shallow, like, stuff as well. And it's again that balance. And I think, I think I often say to people when we just sit, two people one-on-one talking, that I think that it's in itself is a large part of the meaning of like being here, is just, you know, talking, conversing back and forth. I think that is time well spent. And we live in a time where you don't always get to see your people, and sometimes you don't hear from one another for 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, and you want to be in a space where that's okay, but it's also okay, you know, if for someone to say, hey, motherfucker, like, where have you been? I wanted to say something, but I lost it. We'll come back.
It'll come back. This is like, there's no richting, yeah. Speaking of richting, there's no richting. You speak Mengels in your podcast and online. And
you don't like it, by the way.
Rian van Yerden. But he's also like 105. Love him with my whole heart.
He will come around. I think he's a closet Mengels fan.
But he's like very highly educated, so he might also be a purist, and that's fine.
No, but a highly educated purist is able to have fun and play with language and words without it feeling like it's impinging on anything. It's just a substance. It's just a set of tools. It's ultimately for communicating. Left by itself, just as, you know, words and letters, it means nothing. But as tools, it's meant to see like where it can be pushed and how it can be used in ways it hasn't been. And it helps, you know, it bridges the gap for English people to come closer to Afrikaans. And if that's, you know, that's a good thing, isn't it?
I think so. Look, I didn't know that I was speaking Mengels. I've always done it just because I was raised bilingual. And like, you speak to your Oma, sometimes you forget the word because your Afrikaans runs out. So you speak to this one, like it happens. But for my Americans, what is Mengels?
Mengels, so Engels means English and Meng means mix. So Mengels is like a combined word, which means, you know, mixing languages, especially English and Afrikaans, because, you know, I can't speak any other languages. But Afrikaans has always been Mengels. It's always been like a bit of a bastard language. And I think people should be proud of that instead of like seeing it as this pure thing. It's the same as us. It's gonna keep changing. And people are so worried, like, oh, is Afrikaans gonna die? The way that it's not gonna die is by changing. The way it's gonna voortplant and stay with us is by growing and changing and evolving. And it already has, you know, long before, it's always been Mengels. It's like, that's what makes it kind of cool. Language is just the, you know, sounds we make with our mouth. And if people can understand you, then success. It's not deeper than that.
No.
People shouldn't put it on a pedestal.
No.
Because it doesn't exist.
Yeah. There's a meme about people who drag people with accents or who don't speak English well. And English is a language, not a measure of intelligence. And I think it's true for all languages. And I think we all think that ours is the right one and yours is the wrong one. It doesn't fucking matter. It's all the same thing. It's all exactly the same thing.
Exactly. It really is.
But speaking on that, you speak very nicely about your culture and Afrikaans language. You're spiritual as well. How important is your Afrikaans culture to you? And how do you like mesh spirituality and your culture?
No, I think I
sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Do I mesh them?
Well, you must, because you're you, right? And you live in this world.
Which, yeah, I like
both.
I think the thing I do love the Afrikaans culture, and I mean, I love all cultures, but I didn't grow up in, you know, I think with Afrikaans, I like having fun with it as well. I think that's one of the things I like about Afrikaans culture, is that it can make fun of itself as well. I think once you are willing to make fun of yourself or of your culture or things you believe in, then you take away the sort of like seriousness that it holds. Then you can almost become playful with your own future. And that's kind of what you want. If you're very serious about like success and succeeding and being seen in a certain way, then, you know, you're setting yourself up for like being, you know, falling hard, where if you don't take certain things too seriously, you can view yourself and those things with a sense of playfulness and lightness. And I think that's a good way of being in the world. I think we need to zoom out sometimes and be like, okay, I see the culture and I enjoy it and I play with it and I take part in it, but you can also zoom out and be like, the whole idea of culture is also just so ridiculous. It's like the 9-to-5 of a folk, so to speak, you know.
Valid.
Yeah.
No, it is, dude. I'm from a multicultural house, and sometimes looking at them and how they like butt heads over stupid, like, for me, stupid shit, because I'm from both, right? And my sister would be like, silly things. And you look at it and you're like, this is so ridiculous, actually. We're all just human, really.
Yeah.
At the core of it. And yeah, culture's beautiful and I wish I had more of it, but I don't know, I find it weird. It's a weird construct for me.
It is a weird construct, especially when Heritage Day comes along and you realize that our heritage is cooking meat. Like, we decided that that's the heritage. So, you know, culture only runs as deep as a braai, but...
culture only runs as deep as a very well-placed marketing and branding campaign, because that's what that was.
Exactly. So,
we're all easily bought. All of us. Every single one of us were easily bought, because now Heritage Day has turned into Braai Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we really aren't the only people that, you know, that cooks things on fire.
I was just going to say, don't knock that, because we are the only people that braai the way that we braai.
Yes, that's true. We don't barbecue.
No, we braai. Yes.
On wood.
On wood?
With wood.
I am only half Afrikaans. Like, the other half is charcoal.
Charcoal or gas?
No, charcoal. No, never gas. No, I'm not that English.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Oh, that's funny.
No, but I did only recently learn that a braai brekkie is not the thing that you buy at the spa in the pack of six. Like, you actually have to physically make them. And that's a real braai bread.
Yes. See, that's the English part of you that only learned that now.
Or just the, I'm really busy and this is great because it's already done for me and I can just throw it on the fire and hope for the best.
That's also true.
Convenient.
That's also true.
Convenient.
Yeah.
Okay, so you also have a podcast. Talk to me about this podcast. How is this born and what do you do?
Well, I've always had a passion for talking with people and also for... It's something I've wanted to do for a very long time. And then when lockdowns happened upon lockdowns, I realized like, okay, being on stage right now isn't going to happen. So now is the perfect time to do some prating and, to incorporate my love for absurdism and chaos and philosophy and vulnerability and all in a single cocktail of prating, as well as humanizing and breaking down certain, ideas that people might have about their favorite guests and just sort of show, you know, what do you do and what sort of pills do you take and
real human
when
shit.
Did you cry and what do you think happens after you die? Those sort of questions that you kind of, you know, want to get to... You know, just humanizing people, especially people that have strong social media presence. And let's be honest, nothing on social media is real. Even the things packaged and sold as real and authentic.
No.
It's still not real.
Nope.
And I'm always amazed at how strongly people buy into social media, almost like it's reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
Which in itself, anyone that knows reality TV is not reality at all.
It's scripted as fuck, yeah.
Yeah, and social media, you know, is also not real. And I think people have these concepts of people that they listen to or look up to or watch on screen. And it was just about sort of like breaking that... And just looking at the person behind it as a person.
The character that you are on that, because obviously it's a piece of you, but it's definitely a bit of a character for me, I think. Where did you draw that from? What is that from?
Groothond.
Yeah.
So Groothond was actually born on the music video for Awaken the Lekkerness. And the Lekkerness, by the way, is also a philosophy. But yeah, so Groothond got born there. And I think certain things it's better to approach from the point of view of a character. Sometimes when you write a song, you do it through a hypothetical point of view or set of eyes, or you do it from a imaginative, oh, if this was to happen, how would that make me feel? Let me write about that. Or if I was this badass, like, you know, gangster kind of guy, which is what hip hop really is. Very few of them are really gangster. You know, they're more, you know, divas, I think. Yeah. But you write from that character and it actually enables you to tap into different parts. And I think in Prating, Grootond is a large part of it is just me. And a large part of it is just an exaggerated version. And a large part of it is just like a lot of the things I wish I could always be, but I can only be some of the times.
Okay.
But Grootond, the minute you like have that Grootond energy, then you can just, you know, you can go Groot. But I know sitting here, you can't go Groot all of the time.
Yeah.
Life is a balancing act between going kak groot and, you know, going kak klein. You can't always go groot, but if you don't go groot, you go do it.
Wow. And
now I'm starting to tap into groot horns. Yeah.
New tattoo idea. If you don't go through it, you go do it. Thanks, Peach. Also, circled right back to fucking balance. The universe is definitely trying to tell me something.
Yes.
Last question.
Okay.
Last question, because I know you're a busy man and I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I think this one's going to be a big one. Last question. I might have borrowed this one. What happens when you die?
Huh. Well, everyone who knows...
went through it.
Yeah, are no longer fair to tell us. But to give you... I think... So... A question I always used to ask people is, do you believe you have a soul? Do you?
Oh, you're asking me? I don't know. I don't know. If I do have one, I wouldn't be opposed to selling it. So, like, if you're listening and you're like some kind of reach out, I'm here. Meet
Okay. No, do you believe you have a soul? So, I believe your... Many things happen when you die. I think your body dies and goes back to, you know, the earth and the mycelium network. But I think we do have souls, and the soul is the part of us that is eternal. I actually don't think we have souls. I think we are souls and we have bodies right now. And the body will very much just die, like most, like everything that's alive. Everything that's alive will die. I've not encountered anything living yet that won't die. You know, every tree, every bee, everyone's dying. And the body will definitely die. And then the soul will definitely continue. And whether you have any recollection of your memories or consciousness that you have built up over your 70 or 80 years, if you're lucky, while on this ball floating in space, I don't know. But I think if you really do examine your existence, you can feel that there's many layers to yourself. There's an aging body. There's a emotional part of you and a psychological part, and there's like things that have changed and shaped you, but then there's also the soul, which is like the highest possible self, the thing that just observes and witnesses this whole physical and emotional journey, and then it, you know, moves on.
Wow. On that note, listen, speaking of aging bodies, I did want to tell you, you're looking fucking great with gray hair, just by the way.
Really? Thank you. I want to hear that. I need to, because I have to accept that I am going gray at a very rapid pace. Even on the...
Hot as fuck. Hot as fuck.
Listen, you can stay. Thank you. No, it's something that you can either choose to fight it and... and start dying stuff, or you just embrace it. And I have chosen to just, you know, these are genes. You can fight and resist genes and fight against them to a certain extent, but ultimately, these ones are wrong.
Keep it. They make you look wise and sexy. I would definitely go with this look.
And wise and sexy is not a bad look, is it?
Now that I've sufficiently embarrassed you, Peach, thank you for coming to my podcast.
No, thank you. I've really, really enjoyed chatting.
Okay, where can we find Prating? Prating? Prating.
Prating is on Van Pletsen's YouTube channel. The cool thing about the word Prating, because it didn't exist, now it does, trademark, by the way. You could just search Prating, and the only result you will find is Prating. And that's the cool thing about coming up with names that don't exist. I would recommend it, is it makes it easy for people to find you.
Okay, thanks, Peach. I mean, none of us have the same brains as you, but we'll all fucking try now. Thank you.
You listen. Your power is that you don't have this brain. That's what you got going for you.
Oh my god. Okay. Peach, thank you so much for your time. We'll go and follow you and everything and like come back. Let's do this again.
Let's definitely do it again. Thank you.
Awesome. That's it. We're done. Thank you very much. This is great.
Thanks so much.
Have a good day, dude.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Remember, you can catch the full video on exotv.me and you can meet us in kind of real life. Thanks to DJ Chalk for the music. You can catch him at www.chalksprosound.co.za. New episodes on Jackpod and ExoTV every Monday. Love you.